you know, and this so-called temporary shutdown of the government. I'm just so sick of seeing anyone try to justify the fact that there is a shutdown of the government, and all of these people, and all these people aren't getting paid. And of course, I don't understand why our dear president, since he said Mexico is going to pay for the government, pay for the wall, why all of a sudden he's not talking about that. But in any event, quickly to tell you about the weather, it's going to be cold this weekend, and forecast is actually now I'm getting a somewhat different weather report saying there could be hazardous weather conditions, and I guess that's although tonight mostly clear, very low, 15 degrees, so bundle up. Increasing clouds tomorrow, and then there's still the prediction of 60% prediction of snow likely on Saturday night. Again, very cold, so at least it will be snow. It won't be a mixture, or should not be a mixture, of rain. And if you're out on Saturday night, the snow is likely mainly after 1 a.m. So that most people will be home snug in bed. The slight chance of snow on Sunday is before 1 p.m. cloudy, and then gradually becoming mostly sunny on Sunday. By Sunday night, partly cloudy. Monday should be sunny. Monday night, mostly clear. And Tuesday, sunny with a warming trend, almost 40%. So we're back here now, Bill Wolfson and I. We're sorry to say that our third compadre here, or third sports guy, John Manfreda, is ill. He's not just taken to his bed because of what's happened this year with the Giants. And, of course, I'm in deep mourning because of my Packers, although the big news now is the new Packer coach, LaFleur. And but we have a lot from Bill, who's Eagles. I guess we should talk about and start talking about what their chance is. And, of course, we should also talk about the game with last weekend with Chicago. I think that almost uniformly the prediction was that Chicago would win that game. One question I had is how were the Eagles able to contain Mac? I mean, they really did a good job, you know, he wasn't the factor that everybody thought he would be in that game.
Good afternoon, Pat. Good afternoon, Hunterdon County. It's Bill Wolfson. And not only am I happy that the Eagles survived the Bears, but I'm happy that the Flyers didn't lose last night on the ice to the Dallas Stars. They managed to win 2-1. They came close to losing the game when Dallas scored in the third period, but somehow they survived a flurry of shots in the last 2 minutes and managed to stay, become winners once again. So let's hope this is a trend, although they sound like they're going to tank for a draft choice. At least it has that smell. I don't like that in hockey or in any other sport. But let's talk about the Eagles, and the way they contained Trevon Mack was interesting. First of all, nobody gets rid of the ball faster than Nick Foles, and he knew the Eagles were not having a good running game, so he was forced to pass. However, the O-line has never played quite so well as it played against the Chicago Bears last Sunday afternoon.
And you know what? That was really a fun game to watch.
Because it was even such a defensive battle.
Yeah, and even if you're not a fan, and of course I'm not a fan of either team, I had to root for the Eagles because my grandchildren, two of
not
them are
of me, your grandchildren. Okay.
Two of my grandchildren are, you know, diehard Eagle fans, and because frankly, although the Bears are a huge rival to the Packers, I still like the team, and I was actually predicted after the first game that they played with the Packers that the Bears could easily come out on top of the division because it was just apparent how well they were playing, And although they lost to the Packers, I believe they were ahead at one point at the 20-0. So
that's true. But you know, the way to contain a guy like Khalil Mack is get rid of the ball fast and make sure your O-line is playing very, very well, which the Eagles' O-line was. Remember, this is a very different team than the team that lost 47-7 to New Orleans in Week 11 back in November. The real concern that I think all the Eagles fans have to have is that the running game is not what we'd like it to be. Wendell Smallwood's healthy, finally. Yeah, is no longer an Eagle, as everyone knows, from last year, though I enjoyed watching him. And, you know, we have tight ends who can really grab a ball. But I must tell you, on that kick, my heart was in my throat. And kudos
the first one or the second one? You know, there's been a lot of talk.
Remember, he made the first one.
He did make the first one.
Which is why it was smart that they called that timeout just as the ball was before the ball was snapped.
Well, in fact, it was funny because my grandson Tommy, who's a huge Eagle fan, you know, basically said when they called the timeout, oh, why are they bothering to do it? They'll make it on the next time. And, of course, they didn't. And as we all know, anybody who's watched these games over the years knows that the team that's behind and will win if the field goal is not made usually calls a timeout. If they have a timeout, they call it because they want to rattle the kicker.
That's right. And here in this case, I think the ball was on target, but Jervon Hester, who probably still has a bruise under his on his hand, managed to get a hand on the ball.
Oh, did he? I didn't see that.
Yeah,
you mean to say on that kick?
Jervon Hester actually managed to tip the ball. He got a hand on the ball. If you watch the play carefully, when Cody Parkey put his foot into the ball, Trevon was already at making his leap and managed to get his hand up. And when he was interviewed, he knew immediately he had deflected the kick, but he didn't know by how much because he felt the sensation of the ball brushing against the three middle fingers on his left hand. It grazed his fingertips. And he's somewhat overwhelmed. He's a pickup player from midseason. Halati and Agata had pushed forward, and together they pushed their hands up, and the kick just so happened to touch Hester's fingers. Nobody really knows how he managed to get lucky, but, you know, he was a practice squad guy, but he's 6'3". He can really jump. And it paid off this time. And he's a great story about him in Philly.com. It's worth checking out. He's a defensive tackle, but he's been with the Rams. He's gotten cut. He had a full scholarship at Pitt. He had a tough path getting into Pitt. And
in other words, he's not too smart.
It's not a question of not too smart, but you know, he lost his father while he was 16 to cancer. He had been drafted by the Raiders in 17. They waived him, and the Eagles signed him to the practice squad and put him on the roster in October. And he basically sat on the bench. He was one of the extra defensive players. And when he turned to track the flight of the ball, he couldn't quite see it. His big fear was that he had not gotten enough of it to keep it from going through the uprights. He turned around. He never saw the ball hit the left upright and then hit the crossbar.
Yeah, wasn't that amazing?
Back into the field. That was astonishing.
I mean, it could have been hit the upright, hit the crossbar, and then go in.
Yeah, which would have been 3 points, and the Bears would be playing the Rams.
That's right.
But he never saw the, as they're calling it, the double doink. The ball's carom off the left upright and off the crossbar. But he heard the crowd go sudden and completely silent.
And that, of course, since they were playing a home game in Chicago, I think they were stunned. I think they couldn't believe it. But it really was a good game. I mean, it was not a one-sided game.
I will tell you, I am critical of the Eagles' play calling on their last drive. Foles has the ball at the 10. Then he has the ball at the 2. First down on the 2, goal to go. First play, he hands it to Wendell Smallwood, who's 5'8". Certainly can squirt through all the little holes, but he hits the fleshy avalanche of the Chicago Bears front defensive line and linebackers. And he tries, and he is bounced back. No gain, no loss. Second down, same play. Third down, same play. Now it's fourth down. Who knows what's going to happen? And the Eagles are behind. So the ball is snapped from the shotgun. Foles delivers it to Golden Tate, standing with about 6 inches between his toes and the end zone. He's standing in the end zone, and the ball is caught right at the corner. Eagles go up, and now they try to get 2 points. And they can't. They try to
right.
run it in, and they can't.
No, I know.
But they called the same play with Wendell Smallwood, and it made no sense. What I would have done, I was begging for the Philly special. Everybody. I thought Foles would take it from the shotgun, hand it to Smallwood, and Foles would run right, and Smallwood would run left with a couple of tackles pulling. So he could get in there for 2, because then a field goal would have only
That's
tied
right.
the game.
That's right.
So now it's...
Yeah, and I think everybody thought, after they didn't make that 2-point conversion, I think everybody thought, that's it.
Up by 1, it's 15. It's 16-15.
Yep. That's right.
And I turned and I said to my wife, I don't think the Eagles are going to win this game. The defense is not going to hold them. They've got to hope either for a turnover or an interception. And she looked at me and said those immortal words of non-football lovers everywhere. So if they win, what do you get? And I said to myself, I'll show her.
Well, I can tell you, my husband didn't say that. But, you know, the other thing that was, to me, pretty amazing is that it was such a fun game to watch, even though it had such a low score. I mean, usually low-scoring games are, they're kind of not that much fun, unless your team happens to be in the game. But
I quite agree. I enjoy defensive play. I enjoy the line play tremendously, and I don't think the line play gets enough attention. You see these big, huge guys, but now they're not just big and huge. They're big, huge, and fast.
That's what's so amazing. I mean, in the old days, you never thought that the refrigerator would be able to move more than, be able to put his big body in front of somebody. But, I think there was one time, if I recall a game years ago, where he ran and did a pretty good job of it, but probably collapsed after the run. But that was not something that you expected these big, 300-pound guys to do.
Yeah. No question about it, Pat.
So did you watch, what I thought was really such a runaway was the national championship. I mean, we watched about the first half, went into the third quarter.
Clemson just
ran away with that game. I mean, Alabama, looked like they didn't show up. And yet now I did hear that apparently 4 of the Alabama players are going to go into the draft.
That's interesting, because I did not see the national championship game. I was otherwise occupied that evening with work. And so I have to tell you that I did not see it. And I'm kind of not a fan of either team. I kind of like Alabama and that whole Southeast Conference craziness that they...
I don't like Alabama.
That they go through.
And one of the things, and I don't follow college football. I follow Big Ten to some extent. But remember, Clemson, you know, demolished Notre Dame. They demolished Ohio State. But I believe, if I recall, there were a number of players on their team last year that all decided to come back to play this last year. And they must have really respected the coach, and that, to me, was really something, that they could have gone into the draft and they didn't. They came back, and we all know that, you know, somebody can get hurt their final year of college football. But it just seemed to me that, you know, I would have liked to have sat in that Clemson, you know, and heard some of what goes on in their locker room, because it just seemed like they were such a cohesive team. Granted, they all want to showcase, but they also seemed to be a team that wanted to totally showcase their team.
What was surprising to me is that Alabama did not show up to play. They made a lot of mistakes. There were a lot of what I call unforced errors. I watched some of the highlights, and it looked like they were sleepwalking through that game. And I was kind of surprised. You think an inspiring coach like Saban would have fired up the team for the second half, because you got to wonder what was said in that locker room halftime.
Yeah, I have to tell you, as I said, it got to the point that we didn't even watch the, you know, the final of the game. But in any event, I think that now the Eagles, of course, are playing the Saints on Sunday. They're underdogs, but I think that's going to be an awesome matchup.
I'm looking forward to the game, but, you know, as much as an Eagle fan that I have, it's real tough to bet against Drew Brees.
Even yes,
it
is.
I'm not a betting guy. And, you know, I'm hoping the outcome is in doubt until the last second. Remember, this is not the Eagles of November. These are the Eagles of January. Nick Foles is riding a hot hand, but you never know. The one interesting thing about, most interesting thing about this game is going to be that New Orleans does not have a great running game, and despite the fact that they were 13-3, their pass defense looks a little suspect to me. You know, they've had a bye week. Drew Brees has had 2 weeks to sleep off whatever rust or difficulty he's had over the season.
But sometimes that, I've heard that could be a double-edged sword. That sometimes
with a professional like Drew Brees, I don't account much for that. That's a chance to get rid of the aches and pains. But go ahead.
That's true. No, no. I've just heard that some people will say that, you know, for some players, they don't need an extra week, and it's not helpful to them. But I think the other thing, of course, in my family, we have both Eagle fans and we have Cowboy fans, unfortunately. But I think that's going to be a very interesting game between the Cowboys and, you know, the Rams, because, you know, Dak Prescott seems to be doing better. And, you know, I think it's going to be a game where we look at the two quarterbacks and the two running backs, Elliott and Gurley. And, of course, Elliott is just been, he's phenomenal this year.
I mean, oh, he's got all the moves.
I mean, he, as I recall, and I think this is correct, you know, he, you know, the only year that he has not been the leading running back is the year where he was out for six games. As I think that's true, and I think he had, you know, 32 catches 2 years ago, 26 catches last year, and 77 catches this year.
Well, he's a heck of a player. There's no question about that. You know, the interesting thing to me is that I think the Cowboys beat the Rams. I think the Rams can do a lot of damage against the so-so. I'm sorry, the Cowboys can do a lot of damage against the so-so Rams defense. Maybe it'll be 28-24 kind of game where the Cowboys win, but I just have a bad feeling at that.
Well, also, Goff, their quarterback, really started out the game, I'm seeing the season, really well, and then apparently he's slumped to, you know, about the 25th rating. So he's, you know, it's almost been that reverse that, again, the Cowboys seem to be hot now.
Well, the Cowboys started slow and then warmed up. The interesting thing to me is you've got Dak Prescott, who's a great football player. And
I never thought he was a great player, but I think he's gotten better.
He gets better every week.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a true assessment he comes in, and at the beginning of the year, you know, you always think about, you know, when he came in, what was that, 2-3 years ago, and he just seemed like the hottest thing going, and then really seemed
to
cool off.
Once people got wise to the way he was playing and realized that he held on to the ball a little bit longer than perhaps he should have, and he didn't have the O-line that he needed or somebody to throw to like Cooper, they managed to get him to make a lot of forced throws that were picked off or tipped. Additionally, Prescott now has learned that there's going to be times where he has to eat the ball and take off and then slide, whereas before he tried to force a pass or he would just try to make the play on his own and then not slide. But once he figured out how he was expected to play and kind of grew into what the defense gave him and learned that a little better, I thought that he's improved. This is the guy who improves every week as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I don't know what's the over-under on that game, because
I don't know.
I would if the...
They're calling it under 47.5. And I don't know. I'm sorry. Over 49.5. Pardon me. But, you know, it's an interesting game.
Who do they predict will win?
Action in the New York Post is it's going to be Rams 28, Cowboys 24. I think it's going exactly the other way. I think the Cowboys win.
And, what is the point spread on that one? That should be almost even.
Cowboys 7 over the Rams. And
no, it can't be.
That's what I'm reading right
well,
here.
Well, if they predict the Rams to win.
Well, you never know in this. I'm looking at this in black and white. Cowboys given 7 over the Rams. I'm not a betting guy.
So then they're saying that the Cowboys are going to win.
Well,
if they say it's going to be 7 over the Rams.
Well,
I thought the Rams had.
I'm not sure how that works. I'm not a betting guy.
Okay. All right. Well, that should be, and of course, that game is going to be played Saturday night, so it'll have a big following.
Right. I remember that the kickoff for that game, I think, is 7 o'clock, or is it 4 o'clock?
No, I think it's about 8:15. That's a Saturday night game.
Because
the Saturday afternoon game is
Chiefs. Colts. Chiefs, I think,
Chiefs Colts
play a home game.
They do?
Yeah, I think they do. The Colts have won 10 of their past 11, and the Chiefs were on a six-game skid before they crushed the Raiders in the last game. So I think that this is going to be less than a touchdown. I think the Chiefs win 34-30.
Well, I'd like to see the Chiefs win only because of Andy.
I'm an Andy Reid fan.
I'm an Andy Reid fan also.
I like Mahomes.
And Mahomes is, he's really... Hot. I think somebody compared him to a young Brett Favre.
Yeah, this is his first playoff start. Remember, the Chiefs had a bye week.
Right.
They're coming off a bye week. They're not banged up. At least if they are, they're getting better. Everything stopped hurting. But, you know, I think the Colts are a flash in the pan.
Really?
Yeah, I think Andrew... I'm not crazy about Andrew Luck as a quarterback. I've seen him hit the fan many, many times and get rattled.
Well, I don't think they're a flash in the pan, but I still have to take Kansas City, and mainly because, you know, we're both Andy Reid fans, and it would be nice Andy to go all the way. What can I tell you? And, of course, the Chargers-Patriot game is Sunday at 1:05 p.m. And, you know, I have to say,
I'm rooting for the Chargers.
Isn't everyone? I mean, I think the Patriots have been in the playoffs, what, for 9 seasons straight? I mean, you know, and they always seem to be able to pull it out. Brady always is able to pull it out. But I have a feeling that, you know, 9/10 of the country is, you know, we're all going to be rating, I'm sorry, we're all going to be rooting for the Chargers. And it would be nice to see that happen. And, of course, what would really be interesting in my family is if both the Cowboys and the Eagles win this weekend.
Well, if the Cowboys and the Eagles win, now you have every Eagle fan's fantasy beating the Cowboys in the playoffs.
And every Cowboys fan, Super Bowl. The same fantasy. I mean, can you imagine? And, of course, in my own family, I think we'll have to separate the Cowboy fans from the Eagles fans. Not just separate rooms. It might have to be
separate houses.
Separate houses or even separate, you know, separate towns. I mean,
guards with cattle prods.
You cannot believe the, you know, the rivalry. And, in fact, last year, my Cowboy fan grandson was not rooting for the Eagles in the Super Bowl, which I thought was kind of nasty in light of the fact that his brother is a diehard fan, but he could not bring himself to root for the Eagles.
Well, just because of that attitude, maybe they deserve to get their brains beat in by the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl sooner rather than later. But let's hope not.
Well,
What
do you have to say about these new coaches? You know, we've had
We'll get there. We'll get there in a minute.
All right.
I need to say a few things.
All right. Then we'll take some commercials.
I think the Patriots are the low-hanging fruit in this weekend. Because look at this. Although they crushed the New York Jets in the finality.
Well, come on.
Give me a break. Everybody knew that was going to happen. But they lost on a miracle play by the Dolphins. They made a gazillion mistakes in a loss in Pittsburgh, and they almost lost to the Bills. So they don't have the sustained firepower they've had for years. And, you know, you don't necessarily want to bet the house against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, particularly at home in the playoffs. Sometimes you got to go with your gut. So some smart guys are saying Chargers 23, Patriots 21. Wouldn't surprise me. I think that's the way it turns out. But, you know, the Patriots are, I think, ripe for the plucking. I think they hit the wall last year, although they did have another good season this year. They're not the Patriots of 2 or 3 years ago, and I think that we're going to see the New England Patriots going home early this winter. But Pat, you wanted to talk further, and
let's play some spots, and then we'll get back. And I think you probably know more about all of these coordinators and coaches who were up for these jobs. I mean, eight coaches, which is, you know, maybe I don't follow it, but it seems to me that that's a lot in 1 year. I thought it was very interesting that the Jets did not hire McCarthy. What I'd heard, that was the only team McCarthy wanted to go to as far as coaching.
I'm surprised to hear that because New York's a tough place to play and an even tougher place to coach. I was surprised when the Jets picked up Adam Gase off the Dolphins because he's a good quarterback's coach, but let's talk about that after the spot.
Yep, we will.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hey, Big C here, doing a little practicing for the Hunterdon County Chamber's 16th Annual Golf Classic. We're teeing off at Tuesday, October 3rd at Hawk Point Golf Club. The signature sponsor this year is Hunterdon Healthcare. Besides enjoying a great game of golf, this event is an excellent way for you to promote your business via our sponsorship opportunities, silent auction, and networking luncheon.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Well, Bill, let's talk a little bit. I don't know much of anything about Matt LaFleur, who's been hired by the Packers, other than, I realize that I've been practicing law from before he was born.
Well, that's astonishing. Yeah. I could say that about most of our coaches, too.
No, there are a lot of – well, the interesting thing that I've heard is that with some of these young coaches, they're going to try to get a lot of experienced coordinators and others – because some of these guys are really young. But anyway,
Look at Sean Payton. He's 36 or 37. He's the Saints coach.
Well, this guy is going to be 40 in November of this year. I mean, he's 39 years old. You know, he spent time as a quarterback's coach of the Washington Redskins and Atlanta Falcons, and then was, of course, the offensive coordinator for the L.A. Rams, and then most recently with the Tennessee Titans. As far as college, I mean, he went, and I shouldn't say this, deprecating Saginaw Valley State College. I mean, I know he was born in Michigan, but well, Saginaw Valley State. He played. He was a coach. He was the offensive assistant at Saginaw Valley State. He was a coach at Central Michigan. He was an offensive assistant there. He went to Northern Michigan as a quarterback's coach and wide receivers coach. He went to Ashland. I don't even know if that's college, frankly, as an offensive coordinator. And then he was with the Texans for a year as the offensive quality control coach. So, I mean, he's moved around. He was with the Redskins for 3 years and their quarterback coach. And I guess what I'm wondering, Redskins quarterback coach, Notre Dame quarterbacks coach, Falcons quarterback coach. That's interesting to what extent that was important in selecting a coach for Green Bay. I don't think Aaron Rodgers is, people say, well, maybe he's in the second half of his career. I think he's been frustrated, obviously. But I wonder, how much they were trying to get somebody who could work with Aaron. And, of course, he's also been offensive coordinator now for the past 2 years with the Rams and with the Titans. So, I don't know enough about that selection process. I think it was a surprise.
I think it was a surprise, too. I mean, LaFleur certainly has a good resume. I had not heard his name before the Packers named him the new head coach. But, I think Green Bay was in a position where a new broom had to sweep clean because you have an aging Clay Matthews. You have a number of Packers who have been let go or traded away, like Jordy Nelson or Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, people who I thought were mainstays. So I think the Packers may be in a brief decline, and bringing in a new coach after the season that they had where they were not a 500 team and did not impress is a necessity. I think also that the Packers are going to have to look to pick up either in a draft or in free agency a couple of talented receivers, and I think they're going to also have to look to how are they going to protect Aaron Rodgers and give him time to throw or do what he does best, which is to play option, I think. A guy with a great arm, great football sense. How can they allow him to get pounded into the ground week after week like they had been in the beginning of the season? I was very disappointed in the Green Bay-Minnesota game. Rodgers looked like he was extremely frustrated. There were a lot of drops in that game. I did not understand why there were so many problems. And they didn't really look all that terrific against the Jets either at the end of the season. Now, granted, that was sort of a meaningless December 23rd game. 2 days before Christmas, it wasn't particularly fun to watch. Everybody knew this was Todd Bowles' next to last game, and Bowles has since been hired, I think, out in L.A. The problem with Green Bay, I think, is they really need to rebuild their offense and give Rodgers some weapons. The running game hasn't been exciting. And I love running the football. I think that with the West Coast offense, which is really pass heavy and pass dominant.
But I think almost all the teams are, it's a passing game. In fact, I know that Green Bay struggled because they didn't have good runners for a long time. But again, I get back to LaFleur, and I'm sure that one of the things that, you know, they were really looking for is someone who had experience with the as a quarterback coach. And the other thing that I thought was interesting, and I found out recently, well, obviously recently, was just hired recently, but apparently with the Titans, he had the opportunity of calling plays for the Titans.
Yeah, and that's important.
I think that's because, really significant.
Yeah, it is. And remember something. The Titans played a decent running game and had a decent O-line when he was there. The one thing that I'm convinced of is that you're in Green Bay. It's definitely a cold weather town. You're playing outdoors. You've got a great passer in Rodgers, of course. But, you know, a cold weather, smash mouth running game is what will open the field up so that Rodgers can use his talent. And they certainly need somebody with the talents, if not the attitude, of a guy like Antonio Brown, who Pittsburgh can't wait to dump.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the other thing, and who knows if this played a factor, but he's from Michigan. That Midwestern, you know,
work ethic,
football. He was, of course, a starting quarterback at Saginaw Valley State, which is, you know, a Division II. But he guided the team to division playoffs every season. And I think apparently his brother is also in football. The Michigan, grew up in Michigan. That will sit well with the Packer fans because he'll understand the Packer fans. And I think there's a lot to be said. I mean, I think Green Bay is a very unique football town.
Oh, it's the one small market town with the big market team and fans who are beyond passionate.
Oh, yes, that's true.
Beyond passionate. You have only to go to Green Bay to see all the guys with the cheese heads and the raccoon skins, coonskin hats and things like that.
And every kid wearing a Packer jacket to school.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I don't know how people, if they drive up and see all these kids on the playground, they certainly wouldn't be able to pick out, you know, their kid.
Because how do you figure who your kid is? They're all wearing Packer jackets.
They're all wearing Packer jackets.
Yeah.
And
you have to get close up.
Of them are, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of, you know, Dutch, Swedish people, lots of actual natural blondes in Wisconsin.
Lots of Germans.
Lots of
Northern Europeans.
Lots of Germans. But on the other hand, you get, in the cities, you get, you know, in Milwaukee at least, there were lots of Germans and a lot of Polish people. So, yes, a lot of Northern Europeans.
Well, the really cool thing about Green Bay is I always thought was when the players ride the kids' bikes to that first practice every year. I think that's really neat. The other thing that we should talk about is a team that always puts the fun in dysfunctional.
The Jets
have taken a wild stab. And
now, who did they hire?
Fired by the Miami Dolphins, same division, same conference, and the Jets pick up Adam Gase, who's considered to be a difficult, arrogant kind of guy. From what I read, I don't know much about him, but Sam Darnold's excited about playing for him. I think every Jets fan is breathing a sigh of relief that Todd Bowles is gone. Todd Bowles teased us for a year with a decent 10-6 season where the Jets missed the playoffs, and the team got progressively worse as people were traded away and injuries occurred, and the Jets really need to figure out how they're going to protect Darnold. I think the Jets are defensively sound.
Well, and supposedly they hired, Gase? Is that how you pronounce it?
Adam Gase.
Yeah.
And
so it's spelled G-A-S-E, so I don't know if he pronounced it
Gase
or Gassy. I guess he'll be Gassy if he doesn't perform.
That's right.
But apparently
yeah.
They think he is hot young offensive, has a hot, young, offensive mind,
yeah.
And they want him to develop
Sam Darnold. Who's a talented guy.
And is it going to work? Who knows? Because wasn't he hired by the Dolphins in 2016 because they wanted him to turn Ryan Tannehill into the hot young quarterback. And, of course, that didn't happen.
But remember, Miami was plagued with injuries his last 2 years. And I think Miami's poor showing with him as head coach is not his fault. And the Jets are betting on that.
Well, and not only that, Darnold did show some promise, moments of promise at least. It's not an impossible task. There was concern that no matter what he would do, he was not going to be able to make Ryan Tannehill into an elite quarterback. And, that's the to-do list for Gass. And, he's also, of course, has to turn a team mired in perpetual chaos into a contender. Maybe they'll have better luck once the Patriots no longer have their star quarterback and their coach. But in any event, the Jets have always been considered a real dysfunctional environment. So, the manager has a poor track record of personnel decisions.
The Jets are in a funny spot right now. First of all, they've got $100 million in salary cap space. And they also have the number three pick in the draft again. And obviously they're not going to draft a quarterback. They're going to try to find the next Saquon Barkley or the next Antonio Brown or the next Khalil Mack. I was disappointed when the Jets did not make a deal for Khalil Mack. I thought he would have brought to the Jets and the Jet defense a whole other dimension.
Could they have gotten him?
If they had wanted to pay what he wanted, remember Mac.
Do you think he would have gone there rather than going to Chicago?
If they'd paid him enough, yeah, I think. But
really?
It got down to he thought he had a better shot at winning a Super Bowl with.
Well,
the Bears.
I think that's really important, and
yeah.
I think that somebody
right.
who, these guys have egos, so if he can get paid almost as much with a team. That's going to take him into the playoff games, and because they earn more money from that. If he had a pretty equal package offer from both the Jets and Chicago, I would have been very surprised if he went with the Jets.
Remember, would you rather play in New York and be under that spotlight, or play in Chicago in the Midwest, where certainly it's a bigger stage. It's just not quite as big a stage, but Chicago is the third largest city in the country.
Oh, listen, I think for football players,
I'd rather be in Chicago than New York.
Well, but I think East Coast, West Coast, even though it's a so-called bigger market, it's not the same feel. Remember, all there is in Buffalo and all there is in Green Bay and all there is in Kansas City is football. They don't have all of what I would call the distractions of East Coast, West Coast.
Well, remember, too, Kansas City could not support an NHL team. The Scouts ended up becoming the Devils eventually. The difficulty that you had was when you play in Kansas City, you're competing with very passionate college football fans. Whether you're on the Kansas side or the Missouri side, Kansas City is one of those funny areas where the identity is really more for college ball than it is for the NFL. And I think Andy Reid has turned around that program. He's made a heck of a difference.
Oh, he has.
And, with Mathenis as the quarterback having an excellent first year, and with guys to throw to and guys to protect him, wouldn't surprise me if we saw the Chiefs in the Super Bowl.
Well, that would be nice. And, it's interesting because for years the Chiefs, their summer camp was in Wisconsin.
I didn't know that.
And, yep, in River Falls. So they were up in River Falls. So my grandkids who lived there, you know, they were around town. They would go out and watch everything. So their second favorite team, of course, behind the Packers is the Chiefs. So, and then, of course, because Andy Reid went to the Chiefs, I mean, I've been following them more than I would have otherwise.
I always liked Reid as a coach with the Eagles. He got us close but couldn't get us there, and he had terrible family problems. One son died. Another son went to jail for a while. It was really, really, really tough, and I think he was heartbroken, and that probably kept the Eagles out of the Super Bowl, although, to be honest.
Well, one of the things that somebody rated all of these new coaching hires. Any guess as to who got the highest grade?
I have no clue. I'm guessing that you're smirking, so it must be LaFleur.
No, actually, I think LaFleur only got a C plus. But you know, Cleveland Browns hired that interim offensive coordinator Freddie Kitchens.
Something now, that makes no sense.
Well, however, even though he's only had 2 months of coordinator experience at any level, but everybody said, wow, what 2 months they were. And over the course of 8 games, they credit him for turning Baker Mayfield from a first-year project to an offensive rookie of the year and front-runner. And the difference between Mayfield's output under Kitchens and former OC Todd Haley is stark. So they really, and whoever, and I don't remember who was grading this, but they feel his stock soared as the league trended towards relatively inexperienced offensive minds, you know, in the mold of Sean McVay and Matt Nagy. But apparently, rather than face losing the man who helped guide the team up to its best 8-game stretch since 2007, the Browns made him their head coach. And, you know, he's given an A-minus, and the Browns are credited with seeing what worked, and they stuck with it. And Kitchens doesn't have a wealth of experience, but he's proved to be capable of turning Mayfield into a franchise quarterback over the span of 8 games. Mm-hmm. So apparently the consensus is that it was a smart, common-sense hire for Cleveland. And, of course, it could blow up anyway because of the Browns, you know. But that was interesting. The Denver Broncos, of course, hired the Bears defensive coordinator, and that was a grade of B. I liked the Bears defensive coordinator. I think he really did a great job. So apparently,
how can you not like the Bears defense?
Yeah, I know.
They were great. They were a great team, and you know, it's just tough luck that. They lost to the Eagles, very honestly.
Yep.
Foles threw 2 interceptions, and the Eagles on defense committed a pass interference during that last Bears drive that gave the Bears, 30 yards for free, and allowed the Bears to throw the outside, and people got over the sidelines after they had caught a pass. I have to tell you, the Bears are a good team, and we're going to hear more from them.
Oh, I think you're right. But the interesting thing is, you know, the trend is going to these younger coaches. And, of course, Vic is 60 years old. He was a 60-year-old defensive coordinator with tons of experience. You know, he spent 19 of the last 20 years as an NFL defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. So, apparently, the only year he didn't was when he commanded this Stanford's defense, and that was, you know, he was really successful there. you know, and a court, apparently the consensus is that hiring a touted defensive mind makes sense, especially for a team in the NFC West. And he'll pit his defense against the dynamic scoring of the Chiefs and the Chargers. And, of course, he has to play them 4 times this season. And apparently it's clear that Denver was in no position to consistently outscore these rivals. So, you know, this is going to be very interesting to see the Broncos this coming year and maybe the year after that as compared to the last few years.
Well, remember, the NFL has such parity these days that I think the days of teams like the Patriots being dominant powerhouses for 10 or 15 years are just about over. And I think teams like Cleveland, perennial doormats, I think those days are over too. Teams are going to go up and down.
Well, this is, you know, it's in my view, it's really nice to see someone who's worked in the trenches for all those years, you know, finally make it to the top position. And, of course, we all know that sometimes, you know, people get promoted up the ladder when they shouldn't be. But, you know, I think this is going to be very interesting, and it'll be certainly interesting to see how he molds the defense and still is able to, you know, do what is necessary with the offense. And he's obviously going to have to, you know, get some good folks. I mean, obviously John Elway is playing to his strengths and Vic's ability to build the league's top-rated defense around, you know, because he was able to build the Bears' top-ranked defense around Khalil Mack. And, you know, that's what he's going to be trying to do, apparently, around Von Miller and the rest of the Denver defense. So, you know, the consensus is that he's a safe hire, but the success of his tenure may depend on whether or not he'll be able to turn whoever takes the snaps at High Mile Stadium into more than just an average quarterback. So we shall, you know, we shall see. But this, most people say that this is the most exciting weekend in football.
Oh, I agree, because there's just so much up for grabs. I'm convinced that we have a tremendous amount of exciting football this weekend. It's just as well that it's cold and snow, a little snow may be on the way Saturday night and into Sunday, because we've got some real good football coming up. I'm just feeling a little bad that I've got to work on Saturday.
Yeah, well, I've got a lot to do this weekend also, and sometimes what we try to do is tape the game so at least we can start a little bit later and miss the commercials. Now, of course,
that's something to be said for that.
Actually, you know, I don't know why more people don't do that. Of course, Super Bowl, you always want to watch the games.
Well,
the commercials
are kind of interesting at the Super Bowl,
right.
But you know, I resent paying for cable TV and then paying for commercials. I think they should pay me to watch them.
Yeah, well, don't feel bad, because we, of course, have satellite television, so mm-hmm. half the time we're paying a ton of money, and half the time, you know, the games are on network television.
That's right. That's right. One of the things that surprises me is how much the sports and entertainment industries can squeeze out of their fans and how abusive they are economically to their fans. We're really just chickens to be plucked from time to time. I mean, you know, if you want to talk about the sports gear people love to buy or how much they love their teams, well, guess what? The teams don't really love you back. They just love your money. And, you know, the networks, the cable channels, the NFL network, places like that, I've yet to see too many feel-good fan stories.
Well, you know, I have to say, in Green Bay, there are things that they do, you know, have things at the stadium, have low cost, have Packer, fan days. They have kids, and if you've been to a Packer game, usually they have kids out there. They also have people trying to, kick a field goal.
Sure.
And, it's really sometimes, in fact, some people have said to me it's really very small town. But
which
everybody gets involved. I know. So
which is good, but you don't see that in this area. And I think teams miss out on something, particularly the pro sports teams, because you really want to build the loyalties, starting with children when they're 5 or 6
years old. Oh, absolutely. And you see not only little boys going to games.
Little girls.
You see little girls. You see the girls who are as enthusiastic as the boys. The women are as enthusiastic. In fact, I've told you, and we're probably going to go off the air in a minute, but I've told you what happens with families who have to divide the tickets. And if the men happen to be hunters, they try to give those tickets to the women. And then, of course, if there's